is good, everybody. Welcome to another Gold Standard podcast. I'm Rob Stats Guerrera. She is Michelle Mahdouk. We are here on July 31st, and time is a flat circle, Michelle, because once again, Deebo Samuel is a San Francisco 49er.
Listen, I don't hate it. And we're at a point now where the injuries are just, you just have to giggle, I guess, because it's so unbelievable that just every year. And we joke about it in the offseason and say hopefully they could be healthier, right? Hopefully they figure it out. And then every year they can't. But yeah, it looks like Ricky Pearsall, who knows what's going to happen to him this year. They needed to bring in another guy. Deebo knows the system. As long as Kyle Shanahan stops running the ball with Deebo and doesn't try to give him 10 targets in a game, I'm perfectly fine with them bringing him back. He's super, super cheap as well.
Well, first of all, I'm not fine with you not starting the show with a hey, hey.
Hey, hey, and I have a mimosa.
There you go. Now we're off on the right track. I mean, you having a mimosa, that lasted through Deebo Samuel's entire 49ers career, his Commander's career, and now it's back again.
Woop, woop.
I love seeing all the reactions on social media. Deebo posted a picture. First of all, he posted a picture of packing bags to come back to San Francisco, and maybe it was, you know, his entire party, whoever was traveling with him. But I got to say, that is a lot of bags for Deebo Samuel. Let me see if I can throw the image up right now. Like, dude, travel light. First of all, you're a millionaire. You could just buy new stuff. Look at the picture. If you're watching on YouTube right now, what is that? 5, 6, 12 bags, 10 bags, something like that.
Well, he's going to be living there. You have to bring everything.
He's going to be, you know, he's going to be staying in like Kittle's guest house or something. Cause like 12 49ers said before he even signed it that he could stay at the guest house. So like they got everything you're going to need. What are you doing with those bags?
I don't know. I don't think it looks like that much, honestly. It would be a lot if you're just traveling on vacation, obviously, but to actually be moving somewhere and having to live there for an extended amount of time, that looks like a normal amount.
If you say so. And then the other image he showed was himself on a plane. Now, it looks like a private plane. I want to know, is it the Trent Williams plane? Did Trent send the personal plane to go pick up Deebo Samuel and take him back to San Francisco? These are the things we need answers to, Michelle.
It's so funny how quick players change their minds, right? It seems like Deebo's so pumped now to be coming back to the 49ers, even though he's making just, what, up to $7 million on 1 year. It's not even just $7 million. It's up to. He has to hit the incentives. And all of a sudden, he's like, yeah, I love this. So excited to be back. When he just, like, fought and clawed his way out of this organization because he thought he was worth more. He thought he was better than this team. It's like, and then what does scare me is how much the Commanders are like, no, we don't want you back, when they have nobody. Like, it's Terry McLaurin and no one else. And they're like, no, even for 1 year, $7 million, we still don't want you.
That is a real thing, right? They need, look, they were trying to get the other 49ers wide receiver. We all know that. But they could have just said, forget Brandon Ayuk, we'll just re-sign Deebo and we'll move on, right? They chose not to do that. And I agree with you. The up to $7 million is doing a lot of work, because that is them doing a favor and trying to make Deebo save a little bit of face. You know, it's probably like a $3 million deal or a $5 million deal. The 49ers got him for nothing, which, good for them.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know how much saving face is to say 1 year, $7 million. That doesn't sound great either. But yeah, the up to, everyone knows what that means.
Right. Yeah. If it's up to, you didn't get it. Your agent is not proud of that deal. Yeah. For sure. But you know what? It's working, because I've already seen it reported as a $7 million deal. So, okay. Good for you, Deebo. You mentioned the 49ers injuries. Oh, let me put the right thing on the screen. I mean, look at this. First of all, the head coach is on the injury list, which is, my God. But Pearsall with the knee could be out for the entire year. Christian Kirk, they're calling it a calf strain. No chance of seeing him anytime soon. Jordan James has broken ribs. Malik Mustafa, hamstring. Vidarian Lowe, high ankle sprain. Bone bruise for Grayson Halton. And oh, by the way, the pads come on for the first time today, Michelle.
And they just keep doing the same thing over and over and over. Well, they don't change their training staff. They don't, like, you got to change your training staff.
They need to, I've convinced that that's the one thing that they haven't done. Like, they changed the, first of all, they invested in the facilities, right? $9 million to try and improve that. They changed the practice schedule. They never practiced 3 days in a row this year. They're trying stuff, but I mean, the fact that it's this many people already when they haven't even done anything with pads on is wild. Let's get to some winners and losers with Debo, because I think there are a couple. One obvious one to me is Brock Purdy. And I don't say this because I think Debo Samuel is going to be a superstar here in his second go around with the team. And I'm on record as saying as I was against this idea. But at the same time, Debo's better than guys that were getting snaps last year. He's better than Marquez Valdez-Scantling and Russell Gage and Malik Turner and Kendrick Bourne, who got almost 600 snaps last year. I don't know how much Debo Samuel has left, but I know he's better than those guys. So that's a win for Brock Purdy.
Yeah, as long as this doesn't mean that Stribling's not going to get to see the field as much, right? Like, we need the speed, because if you're relying on Mike Evans and Debo Samuel at their age to even A, you know, these guys aren't going to stay healthy. So they added another guy that, like, is Debo going to stay healthy the full year? He actually did do it with the Commanders, but can he do it in this system and the way they utilize him with all the short catches and having to break all the tackles? But you can't have it be Mike Evans and Debo Samuel. The speed's not there with those two. You need to have Stribling out there for sure still. And, you know, maybe Stribling can learn behind these two. I mean, it's great to have these veterans here for him to learn with. And if Ricky Pearsall can't play this year, they really need to make sure that Stribling can have the best rookie season possible that they can give him. Give him the opportunities, because you need youth. Like, you need hopefulness going into the future. And if Pearsall misses this year too, like, the guys, I'm sorry, but your career is very unlikely to ever take off after that.
I have been on record, by the way, Prisbee Life on Twitch says, how long before Trent Taylor unretires? That's funny and mean, and I don't even want to put that into the universe, Prisbee Life, but you kind of have a point. I have been the unbiased conductor of the Ricky Pearsall hype train, but the train can't leave the station. It just can't. Like, I love the guy. I'm rooting for the guy, but and to be fair, the Niners haven't confirmed anything about what he's going to be out. Matt Maiocco said it's reasonable to expect him not to contribute anything this year. If he needs PCL surgery, he's probably going to be out for the year. Nothing.
Why didn't he just have it in the middle of last season when it happened?
So here's what Maiocco said, and I basically, if you have the surgery, you're number one, if you have the surgery, you're out for the year. But number two, most PCL injuries don't require surgery. So I think it was the combination of, hey, this has a history of healing on its own. And number two, if he has the surgery, he's out for the year anyway, so we might as well risk it, I think is what they were thinking. Now, the question is, Ricky Pearsall has been training all offseason, hasn't he? Like, his knee never swelled up in the offseason. Like, how is it just an issue now? So we'll see. I say send him to Germany. Wherever the hell Christian McCaffrey went to go get his situation straightened out, put Ricky Pearsall on that plane. Send the Trent Williams plane to Germany. Let's do that. Maybe it'll work for two guys on the team.
My thing is, like, when he first got the injury, the report was that it was a minor PCL injury. That's how it came out. Minor, right? So we were not expecting him to miss more than a couple games. And then all of a sudden, it's over a month long. And we're like, what is happening? Then he comes back and he's not himself and he's still struggling and all of that. And it's still like this now. How is the training staff not being questioned? Like, what happened from when it was minor when it first happened to now? Like, what is happening that we're still dealing with this?
I think part of it is he kept re-injuring it, which I'm sure didn't help. But, like, I'm always amazed. Like, you can't get stuff healthy by continuing to play on it. So maybe they just should have sat him out longer, because he kept coming back and then he would play and then he would just get, like, a regular tackle and he'd be re-injured all over again. So I don't know if, like, you know, he was just trying to gut through it, or they really thought he was 100% and then it kept getting re-injured. But the fact that it hasn't been able to get under control is extremely, extremely frustrating. And by the way, people are saying they changed their strength and conditioning staff. Not really. They've promoted different people from within, but they're still the same people from the same system. And Dustin Perry has been there forever and he keeps getting promoted somehow. So they've changed some of the people, but it's always promoting from this current team. Now, they did add some physical therapists this year from outside the organization. Hooray. But Dustin Perry is the guy there that runs the whole show. So they haven't changed it as much as people might think. But yeah, Ricky Pearsall is definitely one of the losers in this situation. Because like you said, like what is his career now? Who the hell knows? And it's so sad because it wasn't a skill issue. It was an availability issue.
It's just so sad. Like, you and I both want to see him break out, have the chance, be on the field. And if he can't succeed, he can't succeed. But from the times he has been on the field healthy and got the targets, he succeeded. So it's really irritating to not get to see it out and not get to see what his career could have been. I don't want to, like, put him in the grave for his career, but it really does feel this way. If he can't get his knee on track before the season starts and he has to sit out the year, like, a fourth-year player, when do you hear a fourth-year player breaking out after being out all three first years of injury? Like, that just doesn't really happen.
And it probably means they're not picking up his fifth-year option. So even if he does end up having an NFL career, it probably won't be in San Francisco. And I like the kid. I was rooting for him, but such is life. Where do you put Jacob Cowing and Jordan Watkins in it? Are they on the winner?
I don't care about those two guys. The way you talk about Jacob Cowing and Watkins, they don't matter stats. They're not, they are depth wide receivers.
They're going to have to matter this year, though.
No, they're your fifth and sixth wide they're those type of guys. They're the depth wide receivers. They drafted them later. They were never supposed to be starters, right? If they ended up being a starter, great. Then that's a win. You got a little gem in the middle of the draft. They're never supposed to be starters. They're depth. And you want the Jacob Cowing and Watkins to happen so bad. This doesn't affect them. They're not going to see the field no matter what.
Oh, I think it absolutely affects them because they're both fighting for jobs. And the fact that
Debo's just taking Pearsall's spot, right? Like, I'm guessing them signing Debo, they know Pearsall is done.
Or that he's going to be out for a while and Christian Kirk may be out for a while. We don't know that Christian Kirk, you know, it's a calf strain, which is it a calf strain? Is it Achilles? I don't know. But like, if he is seriously out and Pearsall is seriously out, then it isn't just one spot that's opening up. I didn't think both of those guys were even going to make the roster. And now I don't know if they're winners because Debo's brought in. And so maybe, like you said, it doesn't affect them at all. Maybe their chances are better now that Pearsall is out, but they were both fighting for roster spots and the competition in that wide receiver. Cause I don't think DeMarcus Robinson is a guaranteed keep. Who knows?
No, he should be cut for sure.
That's what I mean. So it's Evans, it's Debo, it's Stribling, 1, 2, 3, book it. And then after that, I think everything is up for grabs.
You don't think Christian Kirk's an immediate, yes.
Maybe the 49ers do. So I could be differing from the 49ers there. To me, no, definitely not. But maybe they think so. They paid him a little bit of money.
I thought he played really well when he needed to for the Texans last year. I think Christian Kirk's a solid wide receiver.
More 49ers Gold Standard podcast after this.
Who's the guy they drafted just to be the returner? Was it Junior Bergen?
Yes, the Junior Bergen, who apparently people are saying looks better as a wide receiver now. Again, who knows? Pads aren't even on, all that stuff.
I was going to say is Debo the last year here. I mean, he was doing pretty well as a returner. Now, a lot of them didn't count because they kept getting called back with flags, holding flags. But I would like them to use Debo Samuel back in that punt return situation. I think I would prefer him as a punt returner than kick returner. But I would like use him there too. You don't have to worry about him breaking down anymore, right? Like, you have him for 1 year. I liked what I saw out of him. They move on from Sky Moore, who was a great returner last year. I think Debo can step into that role.
Well, that's the frustrating thing, right? It's like, oh, you can use Debo as a returner now. And it's like, okay, but finish that thought. Why? Well, because you don't care if he gets hurt. Why? Because he's really not that good anymore. You know, it's like, and I agree, by the way, they should put him at a returner because that's when he's at his best. Ball in his hand in space, right? He doesn't have to get himself open on a kick return or get himself open on a punt return. That's when he is at his best. I went back this morning and I was like, let me just watch the Debo Samuel highlights from Washington. Just give me the best plays. And there's a couple of plays in there that look like Debo, but there's also a couple of plays where he gets absolutely blasted And that did not used to happen to Deebo Samuel ever. Remember that Ravens game where he catches this swing pass and the guy is coming full speed and he smashes into Deebo and he just takes like one step backwards and continues forward? Like, that was that guy. That person doesn't exist anymore. But again, he is better than some of the crap the Niners have had at wide receiver. No doubt about it. How good he actually is, that question is up for debate.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely not his old self. And to be fair, he only had that one monster season in receiving anyways. Like, outside of that, he's never hit 900 receiving yards in a season. So it looks like that 2021 season was just an anomaly in his career. So, yeah, we should not expect the 2021 version of Deebo or even close at all, right? But last year, he did average a career low 10 yards per reception, 10.1. Extremely low for Deebo. We got to get that up. But if he can get his yards after contact, be just a safety valve too for Purdy. And like, I do not want him to be the focal point of the offense at all, but I don't think that's not going to be the point now. It better not be. Like, the reason we wanted him gone is because Kyle Shanahan couldn't get away from getting Deebo all of those short little targets and then using him as a runner. And it was like, teams know this now. Defenses know, stop doing it. But if he could just be a gadget type of player or a third down reliable guy instead of your focal point, like, because you have Mike Evans, hopefully George Kittle's back, you have CMC, like, Deebo should be the fourth option at any time.
Joseph Ehrenberg says at least the Niners get to use the injury excuse again. It's certainly on the way, unfortunately. That is the question, though. What does Kyle do with him? Kyle loves him. He said he's one of his favorite players he's ever coached. Kyle loves him. Is Kyle going to be able to help himself? Like, when let's say the ish hits the fan next year, right? Christian McCaffrey's not doing too good. Maybe Mike Evans he's in, maybe he's out. George Kittle's maybe not back yet. It's third down pressure situation. Is Kyle really going to dial up a play for Dazon Stripling, or is he just going to say, let me throw a screen pass to Deebo and hope? Like, that, because that worries me, Michelle, for all the reasons you just said.
Yeah, he's going to trust Deebo over Stripling.
Right. That frightens me.
Don't love that. But as long as Deebo is not on the field all the time, use him as a rotational guy, use him when necessary. Stripling should be the one that steps up with Ricky Pearsall gone. Like, the point is they need a young guy for their future, and you do not know what you have until you give him a shot. He has to get the playing experience. I'm telling you, if Shanahan does this thing again, where Stripling barely gets to see the field or barely gets utilized, stop drafting wide receivers.
Well, it's going to be interesting because we don't know what is Kyle's role going to be? What's it going to be right now? You know, Kyle is very hard on young wide receivers. And for the record, so far, we've only heard good things about Stripling. So maybe he's not screwing up in camp. But like, every rookie is going to make mistakes. Some people are going to make mistakes. That's just inevitable. It's part of the learning process. But maybe if Kyle is not around as much, maybe he doesn't see those. And so maybe his bias against younger wide receivers kind of doesn't work against him in this case. I don't know. There's so much unknown with Kyle Shanahan. Is he even going to be calling the plays week one? We have no idea. I think it's entirely possible he doesn't go to Australia. Matt Maiocco said as much, that he might not be ready for week one because nobody knows.
It's really unfortunate their week one games in Australia. With the injuries they have, I'm talking about like the guys coming back from injuries, right? Mm-hmm. All of that, really hoping Kittle can be back for week one. But the trip to Australia does play into this. If he can be back, if Shanahan can travel that far and be okay. And it's against the Rams too. Why does it have to be such a huge game week one, Australia? It's very unfortunate. And yeah, I don't know. Putting an Australia game week one is just crazy.
Thank you, NFL. Levin suggested yesterday or Wednesday, which I thought was a good suggestion. Do they put Kyle in the booth to kind of ease him back to where maybe he can call the plays, but he's not doing all the coach stuff? Kyle said the sound is really like what gives him trouble, not as much as the lights. Well, obviously, football stadiums, quite loud. So do you put him in the booth to kind of ease him in? There's so much unknown there. There's no way to tell until it actually happens.
But also, I mean, we still have over a month and 10 days. So there's plenty of time. Concussions normally are fixed in that amount of time. So, I mean, guys are back on the field getting hit again in football in 14 days most of the time after a pretty big concussion. So it's definitely, I mean, he has serious injuries for sure. And man, if Chris Forster is the one as the head coach for that game, I'm not going to feel confident.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think it might have been Levin. Man, did he have two good ideas in one show? That would be rare. But he pointed out Eberflus. Somebody pointed out Eberflus might be the guy because he doesn't have he doesn't have anything to do, right? You don't want Raheem Morris to be the head coach because he's the defensive coordinator. So you pull him away from that job. Well, Matt Eberflus is nothing. He's just sort of floating around on the 49ers staff.
And he's the worst coach ever. No, he's not going to coach a game. That's a terrible idea.
I'm not saying he's good, but I'm just saying in terms of not having to sort of, what's the expression? Steal from Peter to pay Paul, so to speak. That would be sort of the easiest thing from a coaching staff perspective. Again, I have no idea. Chris Forster, he's never been a head coach before. I don't believe he's ever even been a coordinator before. So I don't know that you want to throw him in there. They're going to have a plan, obviously. Hopefully the plan is Kyle Shanahan is back. But look, Nick Martin got concussed at the end of November and didn't come back the whole rest of the season. He wasn't cleared until January. So there's a lot unknown. Anthony Nagatani, YouTube channel member, says Evans and Stribling running off the coverage is going to give Debo a lot of open looks in the short and intermediate game. It's going to have to because 40% of Debo's targets last year came at or behind the line of scrimmage. I know he had 70-something catches, but you know they were kind of force-feeding him the ball, which is sort of what you have to do with Debo because he doesn't separate. He's not good at getting open in man-to-man coverage. Linebackers locked him up at times in 2024. Like, we saw all of this stuff. So that is how the 49ers are going to have to use him and hope for the best.
Yeah, and to be fair, it was Marcus Mariota back there at quarterback for the majority of the season for the Commanders, or a banged up Jaden Daniels. And there, I mean, Terry McLaurin missed half the year too, so it's not like he had help to get him open, like what they're saying, that Mike Evans and Stribling will help give him space, and then also obviously Kittle and CMC on the opposite side of the field you have to worry about too if they're both running short routes there. So I do think his life is going to be much, much easier back with the 49ers this year. But we saw him in 2024, and he's been going down and down and down ever since his huge year, right? Like, we're seeing the efficiency drop and drop and drop. I honestly forgot that this team brought in Matt Eberflus. I'm, like, so annoyed right now. So everything that guy touches is a loser. Oh, I hate when they bring in losers. I hate it.
Just the mere mention of his name has ruined Michelle's day.
Like, what is even the point of hiring him? Like, he was the worst head coach. He's the worst defensive coordinator with the Cowboys. Come on.
I don't know what they always have this, like, just guy. They did it with Staley too. It was just like,
They love to bring in losers. I don't get it. You bring in winners for your culture.
I want people that want to win. I want winners.
I want people used to winning, not, oh, well, losing's okay because that's all I ever known.
Is that your Matt Eberflus voice?
That really put me in a bad mood.
I'm sorry. I didn't know that it was going to trigger you.
I like totally forgot about it.
You're right about the team speed. The Niners themselves have admitted they need to get faster. Mike Evans is not known for his speed. Obviously, Debo is not nearly. I think Debo's speed used to be underrated, and now it's dropped off. It's funny because when the 49ers were negotiating with Debo before his big contract, what did they say? They were like, well, we don't want to give you a ton of years because we don't think you're going to age well as a player. And now it's almost four years to the day later, and he's back on the team. Like, this was the time you didn't want to give him the contract because you didn't think he would age well. It's just weird how circumstances happen to you in the NFL.
Well, to be fair, they didn't pay him what he wanted, so he wanted to leave. And then they didn't have to pay him because they're like, See, we told you wouldn't age well, and now we'll give you what we thought you deserved.
That's true. I'm just checking Twitter really quick. The bias that Shanahan has against young wide receivers, Jennifer Lee Chan was on 95.7 The Game and basically was like, he kind of doesn't have a choice. Like, they're going to need Stribling because he's at worst wide receiver 3 right now. So even if you didn't want to play him, you don't really have a choice.
They also don't really have a choice because they need the speed. I don't even care if he's out there just for the speed, right? Like, looking at him in training camp right now, I mean, the speed looks for real, right? It doesn't look like, okay, well, once he's with other NFL players, the speed doesn't really pop off like it does in college. Like, no, he still looks faster than these other guys. Now, that does not mean you're going to be good. There's been a ton of extremely, extremely fast guys that have not been good in the NFL and have only been drafted for their speed mostly. But at the same time, this offense is really lacking that, and they need that. And I think just the threat of his ability to get open deep will help everyone else, even if Stripling's not the one actually making the plays.
He may have a lot of what they call for love of the game routes.
Where,
yep, just run down, man. Work on the cardio, Stripling. Con JKJ says, how explosive can this team realistically be this year? They were not good in big plays. I think they were 28th in big plays last year. It was a real problem. Obviously, where do those big plays come from? Speed, most of the time. Like, even if you go back and watch last year, there were so many passes to Juwan Jennings where he is open. And look, he makes the catch, and it's a nice 15, 20-yard gain. But if he had any kind of speed, you could be talking about a 40, 50, maybe, you know, even bigger touchdown. And so that's why it was encouraging, because I was like, Ricky can get that. Who's not a burner, but he's not slow by any stretch of the imagination. And Stripling obviously is much, much faster. And then you're like, that's your explosiveness right there. Like, it was there hiding in plain sight, so to speak. And now we just don't know, because we don't know what Debo has left, and we don't know, you know, what Stripling can do, and George Kittle, we don't know what he's going to be when he comes back. So again, that is a major question mark, because the 49ers have not guaranteed explosiveness by any stretch of the imagination.
More 49ers Gold Standard podcast after this.
Well, what does stress me out about this Kyle Shanahan injury the most? Obviously, it's about his health, and there's other, you know, I'm just talking about football right now. Obviously, he has a whole personal thing with his health, and hopefully he's okay, and you know, thinking about him there. But in terms of football situations and how this affects that, this is a new wide receiver core. Like, typically in given seasons for a while there, it was the same group, the Avengers, right? And they would have been able to handle this. They're like, yeah, we got this. We know this offense. But with the newbies being Mike Evans and Stripling and Christian Kirk, and now Debo coming back and George Kittle not out there. So you have, oh my goodness, Tajin? Why am I blanking?
Tonjes,
thank you. You have Tonjes out there as a starter right now. It's like they kind of really need Shanahan there to get this offense meshing, because it's brand new. This is a brand new group together.
Yes, and I think that's part of the reason why maybe they went to Debo over, say, a Stephon Diggs, because at least Debo has experience in the system, right? It wasn't that long ago he was running it, and it's July 31st. It's basically August now, so it's not like you have a ton of time to get up to speed, so maybe that was a factor as well. Vic Tafer says that the Niners have been talking with Debo for a month. So maybe it was the kind of thing where maybe they did hear from Ricky Pearsall, where he was like, hey, you know, I'm not loving my knee. Every time I ramp it up, it's a little, you know, it calms down, but it flares up. And so maybe the Niners were with Debo and they were like, hey, man, just stay ready. You know, maybe they sort of had that in their back pocket a little bit.
Possibly. I mean, I'm sure even with Pearsall still there, if he was going to play, like, I wouldn't have minded bringing back Debo again, as long as he didn't take away many snaps from these other players. But we cannot trust Mike Evans to stay healthy all year long. Obviously cannot trust Pearsall, even if this didn't happen already. And you don't know, you know, how good Kittle's going to be back or coming back from the Achilles. And Christian Kirk is on the older side as well and isn't dominant. They still need a depth. And I'm fine with bringing in Debo and Cheap, even if Pearsall never had this concern right now. But the timing where they actually get it done as soon as we hear about Ricky Pearsall might not be able to play at all this year, that seems way too... Like, that's not just a coincidence.
I would not think so. Joseph Ernberg is pretending to quote me by saying I said bench Stripling and trade for Bourne. Literally never said that, but thank you for the super chat. I appreciate the $2 for you wanting to contribute that. Josh Dubow of the Associated Press always has good tweets. This was a good one. The Niners could start 5 skill position players: Evans, Debo, McCaffrey, Kittle, and Juice, age 30 or older. The only teams in the Super Bowl era to start 5'9 quarterback skill position players age 30 or older in the same game. The 2004 Bucks did it once. The 2003 Broncos did it once. And the 92 Washington football team did it twice. Think about that. Now, part of those, the reason the numbers are so low is because probably those some of those guys got injured, so they all weren't together for more than one game. But there's no question the age is on the offensive side of the ball for San Francisco. Not saying they can't be good, just saying with age comes risk.
Yeah, and the Kyle Juszczyk one being added to this is kind of silly because it's like how often does fullback start? But that still could be the same sentiment if it's Christian Kirk because he'll be 30 in November. So he'd be 30 by the time the Super Bowl hits. So it just change out Kyle Juszczyk for Christian Kirk and it would still stand the same.
Joe Martinez has called it the hospice offense. That's kind of funny. I'm not going to lie. Oh, were you going to say something?
Well, that I wanted to talk about Vita Vea because I know you're talking to Levin about that. And that's my thing, too. It's like, you really want to go trade for another old guy? Like, they got to stop with these old guys. They have to start looking for the future. It can't be all just Super Bowl or bust this year, and then you're absolutely screwed because you went all in. And when your division is this hard, too, like, already the odds are low. Don't be trading for another 31-year-old guy. You can't. You have to look towards the future.
Well, they tried to, right? You drafted Alfred Collins. You drafted CJ West. You drafted Mykal Williams. Like, they are drafting young players at these positions. They are trying to look to the future, just like how they, and I'm going to bring them up again. I don't want to trigger you, but like, they drafted, obviously, Pearsall. They drafted Stribling. They drafted Watkins. They drafted Cowley. They are investing or trying to invest in these positions, but you can't just pick these guys. They have to actually contribute out on the field, and they haven't gotten those contributions from a lot of those young players to this point.
And John Lynch just keeps getting no heat.
Well, I think he got... Well, it's funny you mentioned that, right? Because how much heat did he get after the draft? Oh, Stribling. Stribling and Kalen Black are the two names, right, most often criticized. And now everyone's like, don't worry, Ricky Pearsall's out, but we got Stribling. It's like, well, wait a minute. Everybody hated this guy in April, and now in July, you love him.
Because you have to hope. You have to hope he hits. I mean, and listen, him right now in shorts, like that you just said, they're only putting on pads today. Speed looks great in shorts, right? When you're just practicing in shorts and you got that speed, oh, it looks flashy for sure. Put him in pads in a real game and it will be completely different. And that, like, Stribling has to have way more than just speed to be good in the NFL, and maybe he will be. I think now we just say... That's our hope. I mean, he has to be good immediately. Not elite, but he has to be a good and be a good role player immediately as a rookie.
The Niners also just announced that they signed Trenton Irwin to a one-year deal. He's a wide receiver from Cincinnati. He's one of the guys they worked out earlier this week. So they had two wide receivers, Debo and Irwin. Probably isn't a good sign for Pearsall or Christian Kirk, unfortunately. We've got this comment from... Ooh, I don't know how to say this name. I apologize. Can you help me, Michelle? What do you think?
I'm the worst at speaking, so yeah, I don't know why you'd ask me.
That's true. Zara Rashid, I apologize for getting that wrong, says, with so much worry about the offense, where's your guys' confidence on the D? Raheem Morris got the pass rush in Atlanta back, but ceded a lot of points. I actually feel pretty good about the defense at this point. And that's why I was kind of on board with the Vita Vea thing this year, Michelle, because maybe it's like, if Shanahan's not going to be 100% this year and there's a lot of questions on the offense, just lean in on the defense and maybe you have to become a defense first team and lean on them to carry you through some of these games.
But also, Vita Vea has had issues staying healthy throughout his career, rarely plays the full season, 31 years old. Like, no, I get it. You want to go all in for a Super Bowl win, but what happens when you don't win it? And then your future is just looking so bleak because everyone on your team is so old and you gave up all these. You don't have a first round pick next year because you gave it up for now a 32-year-old defensive tackle. No, I do not want it at all. But I will just say stats. When I said I suck at talking, I can't help you. You said, oh, that's true.
Well, it is. Sometimes. Sometimes, hey, if I've got to pull receipts, you know I've got the receipts. I mean, yeah. There are some things that are said on this program, which, to be fair, we all do it. When you talk as much as we do, sometimes things just escape your mouth. And you
perfect industry for me to get in podcasting when I suck at talking. Yes, perfection.
That's true. Vita Vea, by the way, for the record, has missed 3 games in the past 3 years. So he's been pretty durable, certainly more durable than some guys.
Most seasons of his career, though, he misses at least 2 games, which isn't a ton, but that's still, you're still missing time each year with a little bang up, playing banged up.
With the 49ers, that's like perfect attendance. I'll settle for that. It's Azaz. Sorry, Azaz. I apologize. Thank you very much. With Vita Vea, though, like, I'm just imagining him and Osa Odighizuwa in the middle. No one's touching Fred Warner. No one is touching. They're going to take up so much space that the linebackers are just going to be able to run around like psychos. I have confidence in those guys to be able to stop the run, where we're not going to have to commit 1,000 guys to the line of scrimmage in order to have to stop the run. Again, a lot depends on what it would take to get him.
But do you want to completely stop the development of Alfred Collins then? Because that's what would happen.
Don't worry. We'll rotate him in. Plenty of snaps for defensive linemen. Not worried about that.
But also, many. Like Levin said, when you guys were talking about trading for Vita Vea from the Buccaneers, they're not trading him. I agree with him. Like, I just don't think he's going to get traded. I think he's using this as just a way, leverage to get his new contract.
Very possible.
But the Buccaneers are going to have to get a player back. So I do not see a world that they trade away Vita Vea to the 49ers without getting Alfred Collins back. Plus, obviously, it's not going to be enough just one on one. You'd have to get draft picks too. But they're getting a player back that they can plug in and have hope for the future that they can develop. So Alfred Collins would be gone. So you're willing to give up Alfred Collins some draft picks next year just for a 31-year-old defensive tackle? No.
I would not include Collins in the deal. I would rather trade a first-round pick than trade Alfred Collins. And that would be my way to hopefully escape that. Like, if Tampa Bay is saying, we have to get a player, I would say, no, but you can have a first-round pick. And if they don't want to do that, totally get it, but then I don't do the deal. But the point is, I want as many defensive linemen on the team as possible. I don't want to have to give up another one. So that's why I wanted them to sign, like, a Jadeveon Clowney. I would love for them to sign Jadeveon.
Now, please, he's on the edge. Please, go sign Clowney.
Yes, and Seattle was at least reportedly at one point sniffing around him. You just keep picking them up. Just keep adding. You will never regret it. I've never seen a team be like, damn, I wish we didn't have so many viable pass rushers on the team. Darn it. Like, it's never happened. So, yeah. And got, like I said, they have the cap room. $70 million worth of cap room. You've certainly got room to sign multiple people.
Would you rather trade a first for Vita Vea or a second for Alex Highsmith?
Highsmith is on the outside, right? Mm-hmm. How old is Highsmith?
I think he's like 28, 29.
Yeah, 28. Those are big years. I would be happy with either one of those equally. Because to me, if the draft is as good as everybody says next year, I want to try and keep as many picks as possible. So, you know, you give up a first round pick, okay, that sucks, obviously. But also, it's still just one pick. And if the draft is as deep, you can still get good players later on. So I would be fine with either one, but I would.
What about Alfred Collins and a second for Vita Vea, or just a second straight up for Highsmith?
Oh, a second straight up for Highsmith. No question about it. I want to keep all those guys together.
Well, they really need to be trading for a safety, because now Malik Mustafa's already hurt too, and that safety room could not be more atrocious to begin with. So that safety room, man, it's going to be the death of them this year. I'm telling you, they're going to lose in the playoffs because they allow a massive play because of their safety group.
I could see there may be some times this year where we look at the film and we're like, oh, phew, thank God Nick Bosa got that sack, because look what was happening in the secondary. It might be situations like that. We don't have any kind of time frame on Mustafa. That is a bummer also, because he came into last year hurt, obviously, and then to get hurt so far. Practice looks like it's just about to start. Alfred Collins is in pads and apparently looks to be prepping for practice. So that's obviously a good sign. He's coming off offseason surgery. John Lynch did say when he gave his press conference a little while ago, like a week ago, whatever it was, that they expected to get Collins back in the early part of camp. So that would be good. Sooner you get him in there, the better. Remember, he had no camp. He had no anything last year because he was coming off that calf injury in February. So he was kind of playing himself into shape as the year went on. To get him in early with pads and have a training camp and a preseason would be very, very good if you're expecting this guy to make some kind of leap.
And that's why I don't think they should trade for Vita Vea, because we do have hope that Alfred Collins can make a huge second-year leap. And now playing next to Osa Odighizuwa is also huge for him, playing next to a veteran that you can trust. And Osa can be more of the pass rusher guy that you depend on there. And Alfred Collins just stuff up that middle with your huge body and get those. Don't let them run all over you, right? And just take up that middle and help everyone else get to the quarterback as well. I want to see what Alfred Collins can become. And you could say you can put him in rotationally. It's still going to hinder his development if he's behind both of those guys and has to, his reps would be so limited. You cannot trade what you would have to trade for Vita Vea and not have him out on the field almost all the time. You just traded for Osa. He's also going to be better than Alfred Collins right now. So it would be too limited. He would not have the true opportunity to fully break out. And then also, yeah, is he upset by his situation? I get it. You don't care and the team might not care, but he's going to care. And that can mess with his development as well.
Anthony Nagatani says, why would Paul Maudib want to walk into the desert after he got blind? I have no idea what that's about. Sorry, I thought it was...
Why did you click on it?
Else. I have no idea why I clicked on that.
More 49ers Gold Standard podcast after this. Now, without further commercial interruption, the conclusion of this episode of the 49ers Gold Standard podcast.
Who does better on our picks of the week on Friday?
Well, you know what? We had a hell of a year last year. Yeah. I haven't pulled up the document, but for the most part last year, we cooked.
You did pretty well, actually, last year. Normally, it is me doing a little bit better, but we were kind of even last year, I think.
You know what? And Pearsall was one of the guys. Early in the year, we were banking on Pearsall. It was like every week we made that.
Mm-hmm. And then there was something else that was so easy. Was it the field goals, I think?
I was doing the field goals and then receiving yards.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, McCaffrey receiving yards hit every week.
It was like receiving yards and catches. It was like, just pick it. It was phenomenal.
Until the end of the year where they finally were like, okay, we got to put this up because Christian McCaffrey is dominating every week.
Yeah. Is there anything on the team this year that you feel like will be like that for us this year? Like where it's going to be like every week you're going to be calling on people to take XYZ?
I think Purdy passing touchdowns. I'm going to, I think it's going to regularly be at 1.5. And I think he's going to average 2 a game at least. So I think he has a great passing touchdown year with Mike Evans. And I think that's what I'm going to be hitting on, especially early on in the season until they learn and up that amount each week.
That could be some place where Debo has a bigger impact is in the red zone. We know Ricky Pearsall did not have any touchdowns last year. Debo might be somebody that has some more gravity in the red zone to where between McCaffrey and Debo and Mike Evans, you really can put defenses in a bit of a bind.
And you can even take Kittle.
Yeah, well, I'm not counting him early on, but you're right. When Kittle's there, even more so.
You really not think he's going to play week one? I do.
I think maybe week two. Again, the stupid flight, man. It's killing me. It's, makes me so mad. But that's a real thing. And you know, obviously he's coming back from a serious injury. It's a pretty quick timeline. I wish PCL injuries would become as easy. Apparently Achilles seems like it. Daniel Jones is back. There was another guy that hurt his Achilles in December. He's like fully cleared before camp starts. Apparently the Achilles is not that big a deal, but I think more likely Kittle is back in week two against the Dolphins.
Yeah, apparently PCL is just the worst injury to ever happen.
Yeah, it's a lot of times it heals on its own, but if it doesn't, I guess the surgery is pretty significant. We've got more breaking news. Jacob Cowing is wearing number 6 at practice today. You know what that means. That means Debo is back to 19. Because Jacob Cowing had no shot to keep 19 once Debo Samuel happened.
That's wild because the notorious GAV up here in the comments just said Debo going to have to pay Cowing for number 19. And it looks like that may have just happened.
I mean, here's an autograph, Jacob Cowing. Now give me my number back. What am I really going to pay you? Imagine if he said no, the Niners would be like, dude, if you don't say yes right now, we're just going to cut you now.
I know. But I mean, he still had to give him something. That's still my number.
It's a tricky situation, right? Because I'm sure Debo's like, all right, I'll give up something for the number. But like, what do you ask for? What is appropriate to ask for? We are talking about people that make a lot of money. Debo Samuel, you know, certainly has a lot of money. Is like $10,000. Is that too much to ask for? I have no frame of reference for this.
Yeah, because I'm thinking that's way too low. But yeah, I have no frame of reference. I have no idea.
There's Jacob Cowing. You could see him in the number 6 jersey at practice. Because if you ask for a number that's way too high, then the guy's going to be like, man, bleep you. You know, like then you tick him off. And that's not what you want either. But you want to get something for the number, right? Never give up something for free if you can get money for it.
especially for Cowing, and you're like, oh, I'm probably not going to be in the league very long. Let me get something for this number. If I'm a young guy and I think like maybe I'm going to struggle to make a team, I'm definitely picking a number where if someone comes back, they would want it. You know, like I would have that in my mind for sure.
I like that strategy. Anthony Nagatani says, I hate these whack wide receiver numbers. Yeah, they got Evans at 5. DeMarcus Robinson is 7. Jacob Cowing is now 6. Ricky Pearsall was number 1. I'm old fashioned. I don't mind the single digit numbers, but I still like the numbers in the 80s. Man, obviously, you can't wear 80 in San Francisco, but like it's okay to be a receiver and have numbers in the 80s. And I don't like Mike Evans wearing number 5, man. 5 is like a cursed number with these 49ers.
I'm trying to see if anyone on the Rams wears number 99 for if Aaron Donald comes back. Because that, I mean, obviously, you can't say no. So I don't even know if you'll be able to get anything, but that could be something. But I don't think anyone does.
Also, I'm seeing that Romello Height is back to wearing number 94 after wearing number 58 earlier this week. Not sure what happened there. We got a lot of number controversy with the 49ers. Why did you roll your eyes when I said I think that Romello or Deshaun Stribling has an outside shot to be Rookie of the Year? What is so crazy about that?
Because, A, we know Shanahan is never going to lean on Stribling that way. And Romello Height, he's going to be a rotational guy. Hopefully, at best.
But if he's effective, he could still win it. And like, also, you could be a really good defensive tackle as a rookie and have no shot to win the award, even though you may have a much bigger impact on the game than a situational pass rusher, because situational pass rushers get sacks, and that's what we remember, right? And it's easy to measure that as opposed to a defensive tackle.
How often is it that not a first rounder, not a second round, like getting into the third round wins it? Like, there's too many big names up early that people are watching. Again, it's all about storylines, right? So unless you're so dominant, like Romello Height would have to get like 10 sacks, like really, and make these splash plays to be considered for this.
That is a good question, actually. I would love to go back and look at, you know, what is the sort of, I can't think of the word.
Probability?
No, not probability. Like placement of how many first round picks have gotten Rookie of the Year, how many second round picks. I mean, Carson Schlesinger was a second round pick last year. He won Defensive Player of the Year. But Offensive Player of the Year, if it's quarterback, they're going to get it. So,
but like, think about Stribling with the guys, with Carnell Tate, you got Jordan Tyson, and you got Mekhi Lemon. They're all going into roles where they are instantly going to be dependent on with their team, whether it be wide receiver 1 or wide receiver 2, but like the clear wide receiver 2, clear top, you know, second target on their team. So that's why it's so hard. And then you had big names go early, obviously every year in defense, but with David Bailey and Arvell Reese and Sonny Styles. And then you even have Reuben Bain, who's getting talked up and already has that storyline because of what he did during the draft of being so like, you know, not smiling or anything. I'm sorry. I think it's like a 0.02% chance that either of them win.
Distribution is the word I was thinking of. Thank you, Brisby Live. I agree. It's not high. I only put $5 on it. It's not like I'm putting a mortgage on it.
And that's what they love.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. I mean, you get enough of those, obviously. Yeah. I'm just going back and looking. It is just a first round pick festival.
Yeah.
Most,
like,
if not
Carson Schwetschinger, however you say his name. See, I can't say names. He won it. He was second rounder.
Yes. Anquan Boldin won in 03. He was a second rounder, but it's not common for sure. And that's all fair. Deshaun Stribling was a second rounder for what it's worth. So I threw it on there. Stribling's
more likely now with the Ricky Pearsall injury than Romeo Heights. Like, the Romeo Height one is crazy.
Romello.
See?
Notorious GAV says, if Kyle gets to the playoffs and gets 2 wins after his accident and the adversities he's overcome, will he win Coach of the Year? It's an interesting thing.
Win Coach of the Year last year, I don't know how he's ever going to get it.
Because of the accident, right? I mean, I don't know if you were following this, but they called a bunch of reporters into Shanahan's office and he explained everything that he's going through. And basically he said the pain scale for headaches for a concussion goes from 1 to 6. And Kyle said most of the time he's at a 2, but doctors tell him you kind of have to push through. And so Kyle will work until he gets to basically a 4, and then he throttles back. But imagine like your baseline is two all the time. And then, you know, depending on what happens, he also said if he like does a lot of work or pushes really hard on one day, the next day he feels worse. It's like a, you know, you feel the effects of it the day after. Well, imagine what that's going to be like the day after coaching in a football game, right? I can't imagine that's going to be dialed up to 11. He said that multiple people talking or loud music is really problematic for him as opposed to the lights. It's not as bad, but football stadiums this just in are very, very loud. There's a lot of health stuff going on for him that everybody is aware of now. So I think the narrative part is in his favor.
You need those narratives, right? And yes. Normally it's like the first year head coach that changes a team and they often win it, right? But I like, should they just be putting him, letting him stay at home in a dark room for a week or two to fully try to recover this thing? Because I mean, if he's still having headaches, where this is still a huge issue and he still can't handle noise in a month and a half from now, that's like, then like a concussion should still not have symptoms that long, right? Or am I just wrong here?
Well, I don't think there's any hard and fast rules when it comes to that. But what Kyle said basically is like, that's what they used to think is like, just be in a dark room, be away from everything. But what he was saying is like, they look at it more like a muscle. And if you want the muscle to improve, you have to push it. You have to work it a little bit. And how much you do and what the process is for that is, of course, all up in the air. But I think he's got narrative now. There's a lot of new head coaches, right? Mike LaFleur, Stefanski. First of all, Stefanski's already won it multiple times. Jesse Minter in Baltimore, Joe Brady. Like, they generally like to give it to new coaches with not a lot of expectation. Robert Saleh could be a candidate if he has the Titans playing a lot better. So he's going to have stiff competition. But I think, honestly, this might be, this is weird to say, but it might be his best chance to win it.
No, you're right. I mean, last year he should have definitely, I think, won it with all of the injuries he had to deal with and going 12-5. That was his best shot. But now he has the storyline and you need that to win these awards. So I agree with you. He'll have another shot. And if he can get this team to 12 wins again, he'll definitely be in consideration. But once you hit a certain age of a coach and you've been coaching for this long, it's like you get taken out. Like, mm-hmm. Mike Tomlin was never going to be considered for it. Andy Reid, never going to be considered for it, right? Bill Belichick at a certain point was never going to be considered for it. It's just once you don't have the exciting, people just expect goodness from you, then it doesn't matter anymore.
Now it helps that a lot of people think they're the third best team in the West too. So that may be like, if they win the NFC West, he's getting coach of the year.
Okay.
I don't know how you would argue, especially not only do you have two really good teams in your division, but you have the Super Bowl champion in your division as well. I would think it'd be extremely difficult unless somebody like goes undefeated or something. I feel like if you would win that division, he'd win coach of the year, but who knows? They've not given it to him when he certainly deserved it. So I have no freaking idea. Is there any training camp storyline that you've heard or anything that you think is particularly encouraging or ridiculous? Cause what I thought this show was going to be today is me talking about all the good things we've heard at camp and you just saying, so what? Doesn't matter. Don't care.
Well, tell me about these good things, because all I just keep hearing about is injuries. And then I'm seeing a lot of great things about Stripling, of course. And, you know, heard some good things about Dre Greenlaw. But what about, like, what else are you hearing that you think I would roll my eyes at?
Well, the other good thing that we were hearing good things about Jordan James, and now he's hurt. But also Kalen Black has been getting rave reviews from people, and he was killed after the draft. I mean,
do you get rave reviews though before putting pads on, before tackling happens? Like you're running back, what, you're just faking getting tackled? like what? We don't know anything. You're just going through guys pretending like you wouldn't get tackled here.
All I'm saying is when people hear rave reviews for Love or for Price, they have no problem with it. But when Kalen Black, all of a sudden it doesn't matter.
We're not getting rave reviews from Love. We're actually hearing that Tyler Allgeier is first team reps, mostly.
I always get Love and Price confused in my head. I don't know why. Maybe it's because they both went to the same division, but for some reason...
No, they went to the same school. They played Notre Dame together.
Yeah, that might be good too. Renardo Green, as Niner Faithful brings up, has been getting rave reviews, which good, because we need our corners to start getting some rave reviews. And he had a comment the other day at the podium, which was basically like, you know, I've been playing football for so long. And he said that I can't remember if it was him or Lenore said that Raheem Morris is like very detailed and has realistic coaching points for them, which I was like, ooh, that's kind of an indictment of some of the other guys that were there. But like Raheem Morris is a secondary guy, so that would make more sense. But if they can get a good year out of Bernardo Green, obviously that would be good because their coverage in the secondary last year was, it left a lot to be desired.
Yeah, both Green and Upton Stout, they both have to have really good years because, again, I can say it over and over again, their safety group scares me so bad. So their corners are going to have a lot of duties here, and they're going to have to be well above average to make up for the safety group.
One thing I haven't heard, and again, probably, again, pads were not on, but I haven't really heard anything about the left guard spot. Supposedly, Connor Colby is going to get the first shot with the starters. Chris Forster said basically just because he's here, but he also said it's wide open. Like, that doesn't mean anything. You're just kind of doing that because he's there. But that's going to be the other answer for this team. How are they going to be able to improve their run blocking? Because if it is as bad as it was last year, you're putting a lot on Brock's shoulders. You're putting a lot on the shoulders of this older skill position group.
Well, what do you think is going to change about this offensive line that they're going to be better run blocker?
That's a perfectly reasonable question.
Now, maybe the weapons they added will scare defenses more in the passing game to allow, you know, for teams not to be able to come up and defend the run. But besides that, it's not like they've done anything to fix their offensive line.
Well, what I could say is maybe they'll get better play out of whoever wins the left guard spot. Dominic Pooney was really banged up. He had a PCL injury too, by the way. Somehow he was able to play through it. He was super banged up and was not himself to start the year last year, so maybe he can be a little better early on. Those are the biggest things. But yeah, I mean, when it's the same people, it's realistic to expect similar results.
And then when you're just, they don't really have true competition anywhere. It's like, except all right. What'd you say?
Except for left guard.
But is it really true competition?
Well, it is. It's just we don't like the competitors.
Exactly. So it's a competition, but of like who's not the worst. Like, it's not who's the best. It's like who sucks least, pretty much.
Also, I know no one cares about this, but punter update. Jack Bomeister is getting talked up by Dieter Kurtenbach all the time. Like, he cannot stop talking about Bomeister. Give me the punting update. There's a competition. It's Corliss Waitman. It's Jack Bomeister, baby. Let's go.
I just love that punter update is your voice. Like, you recorded that.
Well, yeah. Who else would do it?
I don't know. Normally drops, I feel like, are other voices or whatever, but I wish I was there when you're recording that.
Oh, it was fun. I did it multiple times, and then I had to figure out like which one was the best one. I did actually pay for some voiceover lines. Now, if you're listening to the audio podcast, there's a very pleasant voice who says, "More Gold Standard podcast after this." So I did pay someone for that, but I'm not going to pay somebody to do the punter and kicker update.
No, I love it. I think you should do them all. I think it's great.
Can you imagine if I did? The person would be like, what the hell is this? Punter update. What's going on? This person's an idiot, but as long as the check clears, I guess.
I like, good to hear about the punter. I mean, that's actually one where it doesn't change all that much from being in the game or not. I mean, obviously guys running at you changes some things, but I don't think practice punting and in-game punting is all that different. So I'll give them that.
And they may need to get the additional help with field position. Thomas Moore said last year he was okay accuracy wise, but his leg was not the strongest because he was 1,000 years old. Give me a guy that can actually set things up. It's okay for special teams to contribute to wins, and God knows this, they're going to need it this year. So if he's good, great. Eddie Pinheiro. Oh, and also whoever the punter is probably going to be the holder too. So don't get that situation worked out because we can't have any screw ups on the field goal operation.
How are we feeling about Eddie?
There's no way he's going to be as good as last year, right? I mean, he missed one kick last year and it was a 64 yarder that almost went in. Like, it's impossible to maintain that standard. So he's going to miss kicks this year. Just don't suck. Like, that's my advice. And hopefully they don't need him to kick a lot of field goals because they're scoring touchdowns.
My biggest thing with him is that I don't feel confident in his deep game, right? Like, definitely way more confidence in him than Jake Moody in 40 and under, right? You're like, okay, he's got this. But outside of that, it did feel like the team, if there were past 50 yards, right? They're like, do we trust him or not? It would be nice to have a kicker you could trust to go out there on a deeper one, but I don't love going into the season with him as a starter, but he did prove himself last year. He deserves, I guess, a chance.
They didn't need to give him the multi-year deal that they did, but whatever. But he was 6 of 7 from 50 plus last year. Again, the only one he missed was the 64 yarder. I think he's probably helped out a lot by the K balls and the fact that they can, you know, work him in, so to speak, which is a new rule change. That probably gives him some extra distance that he really doesn't have. But you know my whole thing. I would much rather see them just try and go for it on fourth down than kick a 56-yard field goal, unless it's like 4th and 15. But Kyle's going to do what Kyle's going to do. All right.
Never go for it on fourth down. Yes, we know that.
He's gotten better, to be fair to him. At least he was much better last year. I hope that trend keeps going. But we will see. We'll have a full press conference from Chris Forster later today. I'm sure he will be talking about Deebo Samuel. The pads are on right now. Practice is happening right now. Alfred Collins is out there for the first time. Let's go. Please like this video. Subscribe to the channel if you haven't done so already. We're live every single weekday. We're live after all breaking news, which we had to do multiple times this week because stuff be happening with the 49ers. It's never boring. We never just have a week where it's like, what are we going to talk about once the season starts? It's just a constant flow of cool information, and we will be here with you for all of it. If you want more Michelle in your life, guess what? All she does is podcasts. Check out The Analyst and The Armchair wherever you get your audio podcasts and on YouTube. And you can check out
Lockdown NFL Big Board. That, if you could go subscribe to that, please. Trying to grow that over on Lockdown and The Analyst and The Armchair. Go get both of those a subscription and a review, and I would so appreciate it.
We greatly, greatly appreciate all your support. You never let us down, and I'm sure you won't this season either. Michelle, have a fantastic weekend. I will talk to you next week.
Bye, y'all.
Are you ready, kids? The SpongeBob SquarePants merchandise is here. And we're talking officially licensed, as seen on apparel and products at the official Paramount shop. Featuring inclusive sizing and gear for fans of all ages. From premium apparel to must-have accessories, head to paramountshop.com/SpongeBob and use code PODCAST20 to get 20% off. That's PODCAST20 at paramountshop.com/SpongeBob. Don't be a Squidward. Grab your gear today.